so powerful visually. It was stunning. But there were three musicians in that band that had been involved with me in the project, the Red Earth Project. And all of a sudden, I was like, this is my thing. So I am going to be working with some West African musicians.
Ooh.
From Mali again, and I'm going to do another project.
Beautiful.
Because that was the first time since I've been back in the States where I felt, for the last 5 years since my mother passed and I did the Memphis, Yes, I'm Ready, this was the first time that I really felt musically inspired and creative and started having some serious ideas.
Oh, that's exciting.
So that was very interesting. It was an interesting discovery for me because I just didn't understand why. I haven't felt creative since I did, well, since I've been back in the States, really.
And you did Memphis I'm Ready sort of as a healing project in many ways,
Memphis Yes, I'm Ready was definitely a healing process and a healing project, and I deliberately decided to do it because I knew my mother was transitioning at the time that I started recording the album, and I knew I needed something to buoy me, but I also knew that I wasn't going to be in the best headspace. So I thought rather than me having to constantly find something new every time I go on the stage, which is the case when I'm doing jazz music, let me do something where I can be fixed and I can be buoyed by the rhythms and the sounds and the whole history of it, and that this is a music that I call it my secret music garden that I grew up listening to, but in the jazz world, they had no idea. So, you know, this was kind of, doing the Memphis Project was kind of fulfilling a childhood dream that I had of being on a stage with background singers and horn players. The only thing I haven't done is the choreography and the costumes. If I do the choreography and the costumes, Lord have mercy, I don't know what y'all going to be able to do with me.
Oh, well.
All right. Okay.
Okay. So that'd be next level.
But being able to go out and have this kind of sameness, but sameness with music that I love so deeply, was the best healing that I could have asked for. And when I was in Paris, I took my son, my granddaughter, his daughter, my daughter China, and the mother of my granddaughter to that play I just mentioned earlier. And while we were sitting in the audience before it started, I leaned over to China, my daughter, and I said, you know what? I have been in mourning for the past 5 years, and I didn't realize it.
I love it. I mean, it's an awakening.
Yes, I had, you know what, Bonnie? I had an awakening when I went back to Paris.
And there with
I had
family.
An awakening.
There
yeah.
With your children.
With my children, and then with my Malian family. And I mean, it was all kinds of amazing moments. Amazing moments while I was in
the
Paris.
The goosebumps are rising. Goosebumps rising.
Yeah.
You tuned to 90.5 WICN Jazz Plus for New England. I'm Bonnie Johnson. I'm bringing you the colors of jazz, bringing you the colors of Dee Dee Bridgewater's jazz. She's toured the world and brought her voice, and now she's here. In 2019, she was inducted to the Memphis Music Hall of Fame in her own hometown of Memphis, Tennessee. And in 2017, she was honored with the NEA Jazz Masters Fellows Award. She's coming to Worcester in quartet as Music Worcester presents three-time Grammy and Tony Award winner Dee Dee Bridgewater at Mechanics Hall, May 7th, Saturday at 8 p.m. You have this intergenerational flair, this thing that you do with mentoring younger artists. I've interviewed Theo Croker here on Colors of Jazz. And, you know, following social media, I've seen some of the young guys in your bands.
I am now concentrating on women.
Okay.
So I am coming to Worcester with some young women that I've been mentoring some and just interacting with others. So I have an all-female band. So my pianist is the baby in the band. Her name is Sequoia, like the tree, Sequoia Snyder. And on bass is a young woman named Amina Scott. And on drums is a woman you may know of. She has established herself a wonderful drummer. Her name is Shirazette Tennant.
Oh, yeah.
So that will be us on the stage in Worcester. And I'm quite excited.
That's even better.
Yes, I started a mentoring program for young women in jazz at the beginning of their career. And it is a program that has nothing to do with the actual performances of the women who are selected and involved in the program, but more about honing all their business skills, everything that it is incorporated in having a career, holding a career. And since most young musicians coming out today are probably going to be self-produced, hopefully in situations where they have more control, just teaching them all the ropes of having a career, from how to secure a booking agent and management and how to produce your own record, getting everything signed up for publishing, and also wellness and mental and physical wellness, female wellness. So it's called the Woodshed Network. And we've just finished our third year. Yeah, we're funded by the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, and we are coupled with a wonderful nonprofit organization out of Brooklyn called 651 Art. And that is the same organization that Betty Carter started her program, her Jazz Ahead program with.
Oh, okay. So, I love that connection. Yeah.
Yes, I do too.
And because I've heard in interviews that you know, the other folks have talked to you and you've been very vocal about DDB Records being inspired from Bette Carr.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes. Yes, that is very true.
Yeah, so I love that.
Betty's my biggest influence. The way that I perform on stage, after she allowed me to be in her company when I first had moved to New York City and I would go to see her perform, I had never seen a jazz singer so physical that could take up the space that way. And I've never seen a woman front a band the way that Betty did. She really led the band and was all about, introducing young musicians and honing young musicians. Yeah. So I took all of Betty's cues and ran.
Yeah. And you coming into Mechanics Hall, I one time had a chance to sit in with Quincy Jones. We were at a STEM conference. It wasn't even about music, but I had been trying hard to interview Quincy. And one time he came to Boston to do a conference at MIT. And it was a science and technology conference. It was a conference about bringing black folks into technology. But then he was really, Quincy, he's a talker. He started interviewing me. I'm supposed to be interviewing him. He's asking me, where'd you grow up? And I said, Worcester. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, Worcester, they got that Mechanics Hall. That's a great space. And so, so Dee Dee, you're going to come to Mechanics Hall and rock the house.
I'm so excited. Mm. I think that the audience is going to be blown away.
They're going to be blown away.
I really, 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 really do. And I'm really excited about it and just excited for the people to experience these three beautiful black women that I'm going to be gracing the stage with.
And you'll be the trumpet.
Bridgewater Quartet.
And you'll be the trumpet, right? So,
exactly.
Right? Is that what's going on? I love it.
Yes, that's what's going on.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up because I know you got to.
Okay, yeah.
But before we do.
I gotta pass out.
Two more things. On the trumpet note, I understand that your dad played the trumpet, but not only that, he was a high school teacher for several musicians.
Yes, Manassas High School in Memphis. Yes.
So Charles Lloyd.
Charles Lloyd, Phineas, but it's actually pronounced Finus. And if you're in Memphis, they don't know Phineas. They say, oh, you're talking about Finus Newborn. We're like, what? So Phineas Newborn, Harold Mayburn, George Coleman, Booker Little was a private student, not at the school. Frank Strozier, who's a little lesser known, but those in the musicians, he was an alto saxophonist. Garnet Brown.
Who'd have thought? Look at that. This is amazing, the connection.
Yeah. Yep. And my father is very close-lipped. He doesn't talk about any of this stuff. So Charles Lloyd, we happened to do a television show together in Switzerland, and it was a friend of mine that was doing the show. He couldn't air it. It turned into Charles Lloyd telling me about my father.
Okay.
and how important my father was to his development and just to, you know, all of these musicians. And then he just started telling me stuff about my father as an individual because he and my father had a band together.
Wow. What? Wow.
And yes, and that's what I was like, what are you saying? And it was he that told me that my father was a DJ at WDIA. And I was like, what?
Oh, you didn't know? Oh.
No, I did not know. There's so much about my father that I have learned on my own. It's like, yeah. And then if I go back and say to him, Dad, did you? And he's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, Dad, why don't you? I don't know if it's because I was a girl. And he
different
was from
generation.
That generation
yep.
where, like, when I was 12, I remember saying to him that I wanted to play piano. And he said, girls don't play instruments, girls sing. And I wasn't insulted. I'm 12. This is the 60s. I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I've always been a frustrated musician. I don't play any instruments. I cannot read music. And I always have operated by ear.
You got that. What do you call your big ears?
Yeah,
somebody
well,
called you.
Called
who called you that?
Yep, Thad Jones and Roland Hanna. Call me Big Ears. Hey, Big Ears. But Thad called me Runyon. I don't know why he called me Runyon. And Runyon in French is kidneys.
I wonder where he got
called
that.
Me Runyon. I don't know, but he called me Runyon. Come here, Runyon.
Well, term of endearment for sure.
Yes, definitely. My mentors, Bonnie, were men. When I was starting out, it was all of these great men who took me under their wings. Dizzy Gillespie, Clark Terry, Thad Jones. Everything I know and my whole approach to music, I learned from Thad Jones. You know, it was men. It was always these men. And they protected me up to Ray Brown, even. The women, I mean, I was embraced by the women. But with the women, I was just brought on stage. Nancy Wilson would bring me on stage. Sarah Vaughan would bring me on stage. Carmen McRae would bring me on stage. You know, the woman who got me my first solo gig away from the Thad Jones Mel Lewis Orchestra is a woman named Rita DiBautista, and she was the wife of Stanley Turrentine.
Oh, okay.
And Rita DiBautista, I mean, she was fabulous, but she didn't want a big career. And she just liked singing in clubs around New York. So the women would let me sit in. The men taught me the ropes.
Okay.
It was very interesting. Betty Carter would let me come over to her house. She would not let me sit in on any rehearsals, but she would let me come to her house. And so that's how I was so impressed with her producing her own records and having Betcar Productions. And, you know, I would see her albums in various stages of being packaged and ready to ship out. And because she did the shipping, she did everything. But Betty would allow me to come to see her perform. Not allow me, but she welcomed me because I could have done it anyway. But I would always go to see Betty Carter by myself.
Okay.
I would never take anyone with me. I would always reserve a table for myself. And it would always be right up front. And I would just sit and watch. And so she wouldn't let me watch her rehearsals, but she was married for a while to a pianist named Danny Mixon. And so I worked with Danny. That was the closest I could get to working with Betty.
Okay.
I worked with her husband, Danny Mixon, who's an amazing pianist. Hi, I'm Dee Dee Bridgewater, and you are listening to Bonnie Johnson and the Colors of Jazz.
There's a question I ask all my guests, because you're on the Colors of Jazz. What color is influencing your day, or maybe you have a favorite color you'd like to share?
Wow. I used to be into colors. And for many, many, many years, yellow was my color. Now, today, you're asking me this question. I don't have a specific color. Isn't this interesting? I like color. I like all colors. Lately, I gravitate to more of the pastel colors. I used to like primary colors. So I've noticed I'm like, well, I have my first female dog as my emotional support dog. And because I got this female dog, I said, ooh, pink. Let me try pink. I used to hate pink. So I really like pink. In fact, I have a bone to pick. Let's pick this on the air. Why on the COVID test, why is pink if you test positive, and so therefore it is the negative connotation, and blue
Guess what? I hadn't even met you right about that.
Well, see, I'm taking a lot of COVID tests because I'm flying all over the place. And
that's
so
right.
I have the home kits. And when they did that, and in France, they decided that COVID, the name, would be female. I'm like, wait, what are you men doing?
Yeah.
We got to stop this.
Yes.
But okay, we're talking about color. I just had to make that little point.
No, but hey, point well taken. Right, yeah. Good observation.
Yeah. So, I'm into these pastels, soft colors. You know, if I grow my hair back out, I'm going to color it.
Oh.
This kind of teal green. I like this teal green. So I bought myself a teal green wig, and I like to rock that.
Oh, I hear you, Dee Dee. Okay, now.
but I was into these soft blues, and I don't know where I'm kind of all over the place right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, my last nail polish I had on was neon orange.
Oh.
And that rocked my world because it glowed in the dark. I was like, okay, I'm digging this. But no, I am a rainbow. I think rainbow. I'm a rainbow right now.
Love that. And it's synonymous with the music that you're making.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, though, Bonnie, because I really don't have a favorite color right now.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's interesting.
That's all good, and I love it. Well,
I'm just embracing the pink. I'm embracing the pink.
Embrace the pink. You embrace the pink. That's actually my color.
I have to
color.
Embrace the pink. So I'm really kind of digging on pink right now.
Yeah.
Different shades of pink. And as I said, you know, and I love my dog. Her name is Daisy. And I couldn't
Aww.
Take her on this month-long tour I did. And
mm-hmm.
my daughter, my oldest daughter, is my manager, Talani
mm-hmm.
Bridgewater. Kowalski mm-hmm. is her last name.
Okay.
And we were talking on the phone today, and she says, Mom, she said, you can never tour without your dog.
Oh, because she's been watching Daisy?
She's been watching Daisy, but Daisy is really an emotional support dog.
Okay.
Because I am clinically depressed.
Okay.
I have depression, and Daisy gets me out of the house. Daisy knows when I have a bad day.
Yeah, you got to have Daisy with you. Yeah.
Daisy will not let me lay in the bed.
Okay.
She's like, oh, no, you got to get up. You got to get out. You got to pay attention to me.
Oh,
we
like
got to
do that.
Something. We got to go for a walk. But I kind of came unhinged during this month. Things that I could accept and be diplomatic about became huge things. I launched a few grenades. I pulled pins out and threw grenades, and there was shrapnel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on this tour. And that's because I didn't have my dog with me.
Oh, so she's speaking from the perspective of she's your manager and your daughter, and she knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And she saw. But also she had me howling because she said, no, Mom, Daisy really is an emotional support dog. She was like getting me up.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
She said, all these things you tell me that you all do. I was like, yeah, because Daisy won't let me.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, oh, my gosh. She says, but, Mom, that's not my thing is anxiety.
Mm.
So she made me more anxious.
Oh, Lord.
But, you know, because Daisy would wake her up at 6 a.m. Well, we have to be out of the bed by 8 a.m.
Mm.
We have to be out of the bed.
Mm.
And she has to be outside. She has to do her due. So it was interesting. I don't know why I'm sharing that with you, Bonnie.
Nah, you know why? I feel you. We got a little dog named Ginger, and she's an old woman. She's 13, and she's a little small toy dog, you know, like a Pekingese mix.
Mm-hmm.
The cutest little thing, you know. And her struggle right now is she can get up carpeted stairs, but as soon as she hits those wooden stairs,
oh, no.
She's like, oh, no. So we're like,
No.
Mm,
yeah, no. Yeah, I had to carpet my wood stairs.
Yeah.
Because Daisy and I both were wiping out on those stairs.
Yeah, so that's the thing right now. You know, I can't get rid of those little booties with the little rubber.
Yep.
She doesn't really mind it,
little,
but you know.
Those little rubber, they're called paws.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, they look like a balloon.
Oh. And just clip
and
them on
so
the feet.
And so they're inexpensive, and you just put them on their feet. Yeah, and they can grip.
Yeah, she needs that. I'm going to find some for her. Paws.
Yeah, P-A-W-S, and they're sold 4 in a pack.
Mm.
And when you look at them, you say, this looks like a balloon. Except the neck, of course, is wider than a balloon. And you just spread them out, do little feet in them.
Oh, yeah, we got to get some of those. That's on the list. Okay, so see, that's why you told me about Daisy. Honestly, just giving me tips.
At any rate, okay, Bonnie, I'm going to go out now.
Oh, my God, be still my heart, honestly. I'm not going to lie. I'm so excited. I'm so excited that you gave this time, that you were we were able to coordinate.
Oh, I'm excited that you were able to get it hooked up. I was like, after the last call, I said, I ain't calling. You don't have to call me now. I ain't calling.
And I will see you next week.
Honey.
We're going to broadcast podcast, and then see you next week. Okay?
All right, my love.
All right.
Okay, Bonnie.
Sleep
it was
well.
So nice to have this conversation.
Yes. Thank you
I
so much.
I enjoyed it. Thank
oh,
you.
Oh, good.
Thank
I'm glad.
You.
All right.
Okay.
Bye,
All
Dee
right.
Dee.
You be well, stay safe, and colors. I love it.
Yes.
Colors.